running, as you can see. Alrighty, so my God-given sobriety, how long do I have? 45? Okay, cool. So thank you so much for asking me to speak. I definitely really enjoyed this meeting. My sobriety, God-given sobriety date is January 3rd, 2014. And I say God-given sobriety date because I had nothing to do with it. I was not a good person when it happened. I had something that people call sudden spiritual experience, right? So I was living, I was dying. I was living on the like sidelines of society, dying of active alcoholism. There was no cure, there was no help. I knew, I was hoping it was going to be quick. I just didn't know when, and I just suffered. You know, I just suffered through it. But if you're sitting here and everything, you know, you may be smiling, you may be talking to other people, but let's say you're thinking of killing yourself, or, you know, you're just unhappy about how you look, what you have, what you don't have. I completely understand that. It has almost took me out in recovery. You know, wanting to die is one of a symptoms of untreated sober alcoholism, and I've suffered from it. So let me tell you a little bit about my background. I was born in Poland, born and raised in Poland. A lot of guys like to ask me that as a conversation started, so I can cut to the chase, so you don't have to. I'm sure no one is interested, but in case. I'm 41 years old. God got me sober when I was 30 years old, and I'm very grateful for that, but the age really doesn't matter. It really truly doesn't. What does matter is how I feel today, right now, where my feet are. I am currently in such a like reflective and quiet space in my recovery that I'm just surprised that God put me here, because I feel like it's, you know, so strenuous to get anything out. But I think about you guys and whatever might be helpful to you. So I was born to a family that was violent, and I have suffered a childhood abuse in a lot of different ways. I do mention that because it's true. You know, I meet people who ended up on the streets, and they never ever experience abuse. You know, they come from loving families. One of my favorite speakers, Bob D, he said he wished he would have had something just to give him back to explain it, you know, alcoholism. But it is part of my story, and I feel like it can also be treated with this program. And I do, you know, I absolutely see that I needed to get some outside help, and that it still affects me in certain ways. But I know that God and I were working on it, and I'm comfortable with where I am. So if something bad happened to you, if something that it's unforgivable, because some things are unforgivable, but we can still forgive, you know, and to let other people off the hook so we can be free. For me, it's about freedom. I want to be free from myself. I want to be free from this disease. I'm never going to be completely cured, right? But I can be recovered. I truly believe that that's a promise of this book. I have this book. This is my first big book. I love it so much. It has alcohol stains on it, because when I used to drink, I used to read the backstories drinking, and I just read the drama part. You know? And then when it came to solution, I was like, no, I'm not interested. So I will mention that in my story. But I would encourage you, because if you were like anything like me, you know, you're just like, oh no, absolutely not. I thought that people who believed in God and believed that God can help them were different species. I thought they were not like me. But this was one of the tricks of this disease, right? Because it was not true. If I want anything, I was thinking about it today before I came to on my way to the meeting, if I want anything for you to take out of this, is that God is good. One of the biggest lies I suffered, you know, with was that God was bad, or that God was not all good. Because, you know, I can believe intellectually that he does good things, and people will tell me, so I can kind of try to believe it, but I don't believe he's all good. So I'm just kind of waiting for him, you know, is the hint coming? Like, what is he gonna do to me? So childhood was tough. But there was something different about me from the beginning. I was very, again, Babdi, obsessive self-concern. I was very, and I am still, without this program, self-concerned. So, you know, I suffered from a lot of fear, and I'm trying to think of thousands of ways of how I can avoid being fearful. But I don't know that I'm doing that, right? So the problem with this disease that I'm seeing from my experience, that there is a lot of things that I don't know. Guys, I don't even know them intellectually. At one time, I had a problem with a coworker. I wrote inventory, resentment inventory, and I find out she was my boss. I did not know she was my boss. Can someone explain that to me? I treated her as my co-worker, compete with her. I thought I was going to take over, like gave her instruction, maybe not instruction, I fight with her. Absolutely did not see myself as someone who is working under her. And that's why the problems. I was stunned that she was my boss. How does one not know that? And I am not intellectually challenged, but obviously the disease is blocking certain reality, right? So I remember when I was a kid, one of the first memories I remember, I was looking at other kids' hands and I was thinking, oh, their hands are much nicer than mine. So this is already this, I was placing myself, you versus me, you know, and that continues. I still suffer from that. Whenever I'm not feeling well, whenever I have some sort of conflict, I already know that I separated myself from you. Again, Babdi talks about, I don't know why I bring him up so much, but like the things that he says stuck in my head. But he talks about that he measures his spiritual fitness of what is his distance from me, from himself to you. And that's what I do. Whenever I see that I don't want to be close with my fellows, I know that there is something is wrong inside of me. So I hated God, because when things were happening to me and my brother, God did not come and help, right? So I remember when I was thinking, when I was crying, and I was just, I had to be very careful about crying in my household, because you could, you know, get beat up for that, so, or ridiculed. So I had to be very, very careful, you know, and you have to just kind of stop. So I remember I was crying, and I remember this process inside of me, well, I'm not gonna pray anymore, and I'm not gonna cry anymore, and I just became hard rock. Guys, if you knew me before this program, you would not believe, like you could see it in my eyes. I'm surprised anyone has ever dated me. I think it's just the way how I look, cover it up for a little while, you know, but then sooner or later they find out and left, or I left, whatever, you know, but yeah, so I was just hard as a rock, and I didn't believe God was gonna help me. I just had no access to God. A lot of times I sponsor people, and I don't like to use the word sponsor. I take people through the steps. I help people with steps, right? And so, we always come around about talking about higher power, God, and everybody says, no, I believe in God. I love God. God is good. So what's wrong, right? What's wrong? If God is good, if we all believe in God, if we believe that there is some energy that is good, and so what's wrong? Why can't we start drinking? Why do we have priests and nuns in Alcoholics Anonymous? My friend from San Diego is a priest, Catholic priest, and he is in this room. Why? Because we don't rely on God. That's the problem. You know, in order for me to rely on the power with capital P, I have to do this work. I don't know why, guys. I have been struggling my whole life with denying reality, right? But I think with this one, I finally got to the point that I know, based on my experience, my personal experience, I know that I cannot access that in a way that will allow me to be sober and sane and happy in the same time without this program. I stopped wanting to do anything else because it just didn't work for me. I love to say, you know, in the big book it talks about true alcoholic. If I am anything in this world, I am that. It feels so right. I am a true alcoholic. There is no sober, untreated alcoholism for 10 years for me. No, I would drink again, for sure. I don't know, because I think that some of us can be hard drinkers. We diagnose ourselves, right? It's just, have I lost the power to choose or not, whether I drink, and have I lost power, once I started, how much I put in my body. I have lost those choices. I don't have them. I've proven it time and time again. I denied alcoholism for a very long time. You know, Babdi talks about that too, denying alcoholism. And I have denied alcoholism for a very long time. So, you know, the first time I drank, I don't think it was the first time, the third time I drank, my brain, my mind said it, this is it. And I don't say brain because brain is an organ. I believe I have a mind. Mind is an entity. It's separate from me, because if it was me, why would it need to talk to me? If I'm me, then why do I need to talk to me? It's something outside of me. It's an entity that wraps itself around me. And I listen, and sometimes I believe. And this is where things get really bad. So when the first time I tried alcohol, or third time, I was like, it was vodka, and I was like, this is it. I'm going to do it forever. I'm not one of you guys. Some people are like, you guys astonish me. I wouldn't say I'm not one of you guys, but you guys astonish me. Like, the level of awareness some people have a year sober, I'm like, oh my God, I don't remember my first 90 days of my sobriety. I just really don't. If you ask me, I don't know what happened. But I also didn't know what alcoholism relieved me of when I first got drunk, when I felt the effect of it. I truly, truly don't know what it relieved me of, but I knew that I was finally home. You know, now I know it relieved me of the bandage of self. And what's bandage of self? Me thinking of fears, me thinking of resentments, me trying to protect myself, keep myself secure, keep myself important, valid. One of my biggest character defects, and it just really, every time I do the step, something else comes up, is I really expect you guys to take care of my insides. I really do. I want recognition, I want attention, you know, I want to be the best, I want to be seen as the best, I want you to treat me as the most important person. I want the US government to change its law for me. I seriously do. And I don't want to bring outside issues, but like, I really do, you know. I saw it in my resentment inventory. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you know. So I am the center of my occupation, preoccupation in my mind. And, you know, if you're like me, it feels delicious almost, right? It's like, oh, this is such a good warm place, because this is all I have practiced my whole life. But to the contrary of feeling good about it in the moment, it actually does not feel good. Because had it felt good, I wouldn't have to drink the way I drank. So I guess it does not, because I truly, and Bitbook doesn't talk about it, and maybe it does in certain ways, but I think it's because it's against how I was designed. I don't think that I was designed in that way. I think I was designed in a way that I exist for you guys. But it's hard with the ego, with the egocentric thinking. But once I saw it, I cannot unsee it. I can forget about it a little bit, but I know that my presence here is only because I am to be of help to women, or everybody who identifies themselves as a woman. You know, I have tried this path in Alcoholics Anonymous where I brought romance into it and it just never worked, you know. So I do love concentrate on women, but I hope anything I say is helpful to men too. So, you know, my drinking, I was an alcoholic from the first time I felt the effect, which means, what was alcoholic? I had a craving, I have a physical craving, which is nothing to do with what I'm thinking. It's absolutely what happens to me physically once I put it in my body. You know, the funny thing about alcoholism is always going to try to deny its existence, right? But it does not care whether you guys are okay with alcoholism or not. It did not care if you're sitting here and you're like, oh, maybe, you know, God, I tuned out, or maybe I'm here because of whatever, you know, boyfriend, husband, whatever, you know. It does not care if you have it. It does not need your permission. It didn't need my permission for it to acknowledge it. That's the thing about losing power. It doesn't need anything from me. It will run me to the ground. So I kept drinking. I had mental obsession to drink more. So like book talks about it, it's not a problem, physical craving, if I don't put it in my body. How do I not put? I tried, guys, not putting it in my body. I have tried. This was the first, like when I've noticed that drinking is not great, it does not work with my in my life, I tried to control it, right? Once I've noticed that I can't control it, then I tried not putting it in my body on my own power. And I've tried everything. Everything. My sponsor had me underline, you know, about real alcoholic, the symptoms. I underlined everything, almost everything. I just didn't do the healthy things. Like, you know, I didn't read inspirational books or exercise. You know, I went to a yoga, sober yoga, and a lady asked us, what was your favorite extracurricular activity in high school? I could, what do you mean? Drinking, smoking, dating, like extracurricular. If I maybe was like, I don't know, like maybe if somebody crucified me and asked me to do it, maybe I would, you know, but I was one of those alcoholics, guys. And alcoholism looks different, but I was one of those alcoholics that just could not stay away from it. There was no way, there was no 3 weeks, there was no 3 days. When somebody stayed sober for 3 weeks, I thought they had super power. Because it's progressive, right? But I do have a friend and she gave me permission to talk about it. And she used to drink 2 beers a day. Homeless alcoholic. I've walked this path with her. Couldn't stay sober. She's now sober for over a year. 2 beers, guys. Could not say no to those 2 beers. So, like the big book says, right? It's an ability to live it alone. Forever. You know? So, I had those 2 things and I tried to, like, make it work, not make it work, stop. I got in a therapy and my therapist said, Cornelia, because of your abuse, you know, it's, you're going to quit, you're gonna, the drinking will fall away if we work through the trauma. Well, 3 or 5 years later, he said, Cornelia, it's unethical for me to take money from you. You have to ask your higher power for help. I can't make you not drink. Oh, he saved my life, guys. I called him on anniversary of my sobriety each year to thank him for my sobriety. It's not him, but God worked through him. So, yeah. So I am one of those people where no human aid, which means nothing anyone can do will keep me sober. There is not one thing, not even myself. No amount of willingness to stay sober, no amount of changing plans, no amount of therapy, nothing. And I don't abash therapy, no. Please do yourself away. Do whatever makes you be more present and peaceful and happy. I truly believe in that. You know, and Big Book says that, and Big Book has never proven me wrong. So, so here I was, and my therapist said, you drink 3 more times and you're out. And I was trying to space those 3 times away so much. At some point, I did get on my knees and I asked God for help. And I said, please kill me or take it. and I truly meant it. For this time, I called myself an alcoholic, but truly, was I an alcoholic? Did I know that I was an alcoholic? No. There must have been a tiny fraction of me, because I was still thinking of the ways how I can stop it. If I have that still going on, if I think that it's me doing the program and keeping myself sober through the steps, which I got into that delusion years in recovery, that if I just sponsor a lot of people, that is my guarantee to stay sober, that's already a little bit my, you know, me reaching for that self-will. And I don't want that. I really do not want that, especially in my understanding of this disease. So I couldn't stop, you know. I really, really wanted to. I drank against my will for 2 years. I know I don't look like it, but I lived like an animal. I slept in bed bags. I worked in a dingy little bar. I dated people I really didn't want to date. I just wanted them to pay half of my rent. I was extremely abusive to my dogs, and my dogs are my life. And I have hurt everyone and everything that came into my life. I made amends to this guy. I wanted to make amends to him, and he said, I still love you and stuff. We almost got engaged. He got a ring. I only got in that relationship because I wanted him to pay half of my rent. That's it. And we ended up years in, and he has this memory of me. You know, I have his dog still. He's the father of my dog. I know it sounds weird, but he is, you know. My dog looks like him. So, it really does. So I have heard everything and everyone, you know, and I live like an animal. So on January 3rd, 2014, I lived in Chicago, and I was driving, and there was this thought. I was thinking constantly in obsession how I can make it stop, how I cannot drink, you know, and there was no ideas. And at that moment, I absolutely admitted inside of myself, without witnesses, without anyone to tell yes or no, that there is nothing that I can do and that I am finished as a person. There was no rehab, there was no hospitals for me. I didn't have papers, I didn't have health insurance. So whatever I was going through with the drinking, it's just me and God. There was nothing. Like, one time I went to a hospital and it was $10,000 bill. I'm still paying it off. So what happened is, this is where I know God is good. This is one of the examples. He knew that there was nothing that I could do. There was no withdrawing anywhere. Nothing. Nothing existed for people like me as far as I knew. Maybe it does, but I don't know. And so when that admission that there is nothing that I can do to call myself alcoholic, I just admitted that I am powerless. This was when the thought came in, I don't have to drink anymore. Mental obsession to drink, gone, like that. The second thought was it that easy? But I always knew it was from God, always. I don't know how. I did not believe in God, like I did not pray, I did not keep in touch with God. God was not in my consciousness. But he was, I feel like, I always laugh, like he was like a snake in the grass. He just waited for me to come to the place where I understood I was powerless over this. Had I not, I wouldn't be able to do the things that I am doing right now. Just wouldn't, you know. And so I thought that I can live without, that I can live my own life and stay sober, because spiritually, think about sudden spiritual experience is really strong, you know. Next day, I was like a pack and a half smoker. Next day, the thought came in that if I smoke, I will relapse. I don't know why. For me, it was connected. I understand it's not for everybody, but I'm just telling you guys my part, right? My experience. So God quit smoking for me. Like, it never happened. Like, it never happened. I continued to work in a bar. I continued to steal, lie, and cheat. I stole over $200,000 from that lady I worked at the bar in sobriety. I am on payment plan with her, because that was an estimate, not an estimate. She was saying, oh, everybody loves you. Yeah, they love me because I gave them free drinks for tips, you know. So thoughts of drinking came back. That terrified me. My therapist told me that I have to, like, that working in a bar and being a sober alcoholic is not going to work out. I don't know about that. He said that to me, but, you know, that was my experience. It was not working, especially that I was not working the program. I knew about 4 and 5. I knew about 8 and 9. And guys, I did not want to do it. So I thought, oh, I got scotch free, you know. I don't have to do it and I can stay sober. Because I forgot. No, not forgot. I did not know about spiritual sickness. I thought spiritual sickness was for rich ladies from California, maybe Miami. I was not concerned with spirituality because that concept was just outside of me. I was concerned with bettering myself through money. I desperately wanted a successful man who is going to, was going to just basically pay for me existing. I did not, because this was, I had so much, such a low self-esteem, you know. I'm going to just say it, not in a way where I boast, but I did not believe in myself. Today I have a better career than usual, most of the men do, guys do, you know. And this is because of God, because I stuck through it, and I believe He is going to give me skills and opportunities that will make things happen for me, and that's what happened, you know. And I no longer want to get anything for free, and I no longer I want to be in a relationship with God, mostly, and not in a romantic relationship will come. But I remember being so obsessed about it in the beginning of my recovery. Guys, I really thought, I remember that thinking, that if I just meet someone, he's gonna go to work, I'm going to have a baby, I'm gonna stay home, and I'm just gonna do yoga, meditate, not meditation, I was too crazy for meditation, but if I was just going to, like, take it easy, I was gonna be okay. And, you know, I had a boyfriend that did not work out because I desperately needed him to do things. And even if I didn't like you, you know, I would end up in a relationship with you because you had things. That's the truth about me. I judge people on how they look and what they could give me. It's still there. God and I are working on it. But there was a new quality inside of me, and it's what's behind the eyes, you know, and how somebody makes me feel. And it's surprising how people make you feel. You would not expect it, you know. So I met a guy. He was 8 years younger than me, you can imagine. It did not end well. Me not in a program, him 8 years younger. It was bad. Guys, I was ruined, not because of him, but I have hurt him so bad he didn't even want my amends, you know. I have run myself to the ground in sobriety, not recovery, sobriety. There was no recovery because my mind was not recovered. And I finally had no money because I quit that bar, had no skills, didn't have anything. I continued to pray. I always prayed because I always knew that I'm only safe under God's wing. So He led me to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was to find a man because I lived in affluent neighborhood in Chicago. And by the time I really did meet someone, I remember this one guy came up to me with an envelope full of money because I was struggling financially, and I didn't take it even though I didn't have anything to eat, you know. Didn't take it because I didn't want him to have that, I didn't want him to think that Alcoholics Anonymous cost anything. And I struggled through that. So I went for a guy and I met my sponsor. She took me through the steps. It took me 3.5 years to go through the steps. I did have spiritual experience. I balked on step 9 because of my obsessive skirt thinking, right? For me, it's like, if it's not perfect, then I can't do it. And God and I were working on it right now. I still, even though I had so much, this is the alcoholism, even though I had so much experience with fixing it on the outside and not working it on the inside, I still try to do it. I only thought that if I looked better, if I sounded better, if I had a better job, I was really in doubt, and it still comes back. That strong delusion that if things on the outside are okay, I will feel good on the inside. So I moved to California. in California, I hit my lowest low. It's just God's grace and God's love that I did not drink, but my sober untreated alcoholism was taking on speed. There was things that I had obsessions. I had an obsession about this person, that person. I had obsession about my job. I mistreated a lot of people at work because I thought that I have to defend myself. If I only defend it, you know, then I'm gonna be okay. So I hurt people. And so 8 years sober, I was so miserable, and the thoughts of drinking were on me day and night that I thought that I can only cure myself to not drink. So I looked up how Robin Williams did it. I had a long extension from iPhone. I put it in a door, wrapped it around my neck, and I got on my knees and swung forward. And I said, oh, that is gonna work, good. I had a plan, I quit my job, that job I was fighting to stay important in. I quit that the day before, and I'm like, okay, my mom is coming to visit me in 2 weeks, so I'm gonna do it the day before she's gonna find me. Right? I had it planned because I would have done it. I was so sure. My boss called me in the morning and he said, what's going on? And I told him. And of course I had to be medicated because this is not something that you can come back so quickly from. That job, when I was cheating that, you know, then I was working from home, not working the hours I should, talking smack about my boss behind his back, you know. This man did everything. He transferred money into my account because I was financially responsible, didn't have any money, you know, to go see a therapist, and gave me 6 weeks time off, paid time off, so I could get myself together. I came back. This is the thing that you can't miss. Like, that got my attention. Because at that moment, I was blonde, like I thought I looked so pretty. I had the attention of this guy that everybody in San Diego wanted. I just took over a directorship of 4 departments in one of the largest firms in the country. And I was on my knees, swinging to hang myself. How can I explain something? How can someone explain that? Something is wrong with me besides things on the outside. That was the proof. I wish I would tell you guys that this stopped my crusade to become important and become safe by my own will. No, it did not. But I did meet my sponsor, my first sponsor, Relapse, and I met another sponsor. Her name is Lisa S. I forgot to mention that. I am very active in working steps with others. I rework my steps every 2 or 3 years. I have a sponsor. I meet with her twice a week. We meet approximately for 3 hours a week. And I am actively in step 10, in discipline on step 10, 11, and 12. I have a home group. I don't have a commitment in my home group, but I will get one. And the non-commitment in my home group came out of fear. I will not get into details. But what happened to me, my sponsor took me through the steps. You know, that was before I tried to hang myself. But I came back from that place in a completely different way. I just knew that I can't live the way that I used to live. And I would still go back and forth, but ever since that, I never go just full on self-will. When I notice, or my sponsor notice, it's God's given willingness. Because guys, if you don't have willingness, don't worry about it. Ask God for it. There is nothing you should worry about. Really, nothing. Just ask God. He's going to give it to you. You know, and so I live in a way where it's different, you know. But it's hard for me in relationship with people because I'm very fear-driven. I may seem aloof when you're not a woman, but, you know, sometimes I do seem aloof, but it's because I'm scared, right? It's hard for me. But I become aggressive when I'm scared. So now I live in a way, right now God is teaching me, first of all, one of the lessons that I'm experiencing right now is how to have enough. Not a different car, no attention from this person or that person. Lifting up my you know, frenemies at work. Like being enough where I am, what I have, I turned down the pay, like I raised for my boss. I said, no, you pay me enough, thank you. Because I have been cheating, you know, on hours for a long time. And the second thing that God is teaching me right now, and He's every step with me, is that I am okay. Doesn't matter what I do, where I am, who likes me, who doesn't like me, what do you guys think of me, what do I think of myself, I'm okay. I was always afraid that I'm gonna be a waitress. For some reason I have this fear, I put it on my resentment, fear inventory. And it just appeared to me, it doesn't matter if that's what's gonna happen, because I'm always afraid of losing my job, you know? And I just got to this point where I was really okay. And you know, and I reviewed self-defeating beliefs this time around in my inventory, in my step four. And I saw, you know, my belief that I'm stupid. And I have to prove everyone that I'm not in order to be okay. That fell apart, like fell away, you know. I believe that I am okay the way I am. It doesn't last that long, it comes and goes. For me right now, I just believe that I'm always going to experience current agnosticism, right? So like when I was asked, and I asked people at the beginning about re-agnosticism and what's their current agnosticism, they're like, oh, I believe in God. Yes, but do you rely on Him? That's the thing. Because it's easy to rely on God, you know, when I hear it and it sounds like a great idea, but what if things get really, really tough? And I have this, I just want to make a phone call to my mom or someone, but I truly believe that the same as with thoughts of drinking. The only reason why I'm standing here is because when the thoughts of drinking came in, I did not call my sponsor, I went to God. Instantly, step 10 said, instantly, turn it over, and then turn your attention to something else. Does not matter if it has to be 100 times a day. Is there anything else? Guys, I read something in a really good book about step 10. We have a choice, right? We either watch what we're thinking, or we think of what others think of us. Right? So it's a choice. I also, one time I had flu, and out of that time in my bedroom with God, I came out with a conviction that fear is a choice. First thought is not. But guys, if I don't go to God because I worship fear, king fear, you know, king alcohol, now it's king fear. If I worship fear, for sure, and I'm telling you for sure, I'm going to end up on the rocks. Why? Because I did not turn it over when it happened. Or I did not believe. Another also other thing is with the prayer, right? I ask God to help me pray in a way that's helpful to me. You know, because a lot of times I just say things just to be thrown out and just, you know, because they sound good. But do I really believe that this power, benevolent, loving power, is going to help me? A lot of times I didn't. I prayed to the God who is somehow good. How that God is gonna help me? So I practice loving thinking when I can, but I do practice watching and turning, because I almost died because I wasn't doing that. I allowed my mind to take me to places where I shouldn't be. And of course I'm gonna look for relief. And since I'm a true alcoholic, it's gonna be a relief in the form of suicide or drinking. And I used to think that, oh, I killed myself before I drink. No, guys, there is no choice. I see it now. There's no even choice. Just gonna do it. That's my go-to. That's how I default. So I do pray and meditate. I do two-way prayer. If you are interested, let me know. I know that God talks to me. I write down the question on a piece of paper. I go into meditation for a few minutes. And then I start by saying, my dear child. And then the pen flows. And there is always an answer. God always, I hate when God tells me to go to work because I was planning, you know, to take off. But He will let me. That's the proof where He will tell me, call this so-and-so, you know? And a lot of people from my from my circle, I don't have a circle, I have a, but whoever comes in my life, they say, you know, how did you know? And well, I didn't, God did. God is my best friend. He's my best friend. I see that whatever I was suffering, it was me and my thinking and my unwillingness to seek Him that caused it and not Him. And this comes from a person who has suffered a lot, willingly, you know. Because you know, somebody said it to me the other day, my friend, if I am in fear, then I think I'm in the delusion that I am in control. You know, because it's very powerless and very like tender place to be, to just admit that things are happening how they are, and that this power that I can't touch, but I know is there, is gonna help me. So when I'm fearful, it's so hard to trust, but to practice that trust is what keeps me going. And obviously, inventories, I have to inventory what I have been doing, because even if I, 365 times I said, was I selfish? And yes, I was not thinking of others. Maybe 366 times I will finally put, no, I wasn't thinking of someone. So I like to spend time with God, and I like to spend time with, I like to spend time in quiet, you know. God and I were exercising, just sitting and not doing anything. I'm telling you, I'm not perfect with that. Because yesterday I was on YouTube until 1 a.m. But it comes and goes, so my time is up. I hope this was helpful, and thank you so much.